Well, hi, hello friends, and I wish I could say I was having a better day, but I turned on, or failed to turn on the screen, and so 23 minutes of commentary are audio only, and I'll see if I can remember what I said, or say something equally as good or bad. We're beginning here with number 17, and it is Rule 2. I'm calling it 2.1 because this is the first program of Rule 2. Right. There we go, and we'll start that chronometer. Almost forgot that one. Anyway, Rule 2. When the shadow... which is the personality in this case, when the shadow hath responded in meditation deep, the work proceedeth. The lower light is thrown upward, the greater light illuminates the three, and the work of the four proceedeth. When the shadow hath responded in meditation deep, the work proceedeth. The lower light is thrown upward, the greater light illuminates the three, and the work of the four proceedeth. And in this work, we will also undertake a discussion of the hindrances to occult study, which are or have been plentiful in the West, where the etheric vibration is not so settled, although you kind of look at the industrialization of the East and you see that there has been a stirring of the environment, and oftentimes in a way that is very disruptive. But let's see, you know, this was written 90 years ago, and we'll also deal with the overcoming of the hindrances. So we have here, first, the hindrances to occult study. He tells us it's one of the most difficult in the book, and yet one of the most comprehensive. DK is not only analyzing the rules, but he's adding, I would say, encouraging advice, clear advice, as to how the becoming disciple is to proceed, along with the analysis of the rules. So we have in this rule, it's going to take some time, he says, to rightly handle it. We have in it an interesting illustration of the microcosmic correspondence to the macrocosm. And it can be elucidated in two ways in relation to the light it mentions, the greater light and the lower light. Reference is made to the greater light, which illuminates the three, and secondly, to the throwing upward of the lower light. So there is here an interplay, a communication. We have here an invocation and evocation. Sometimes it is the greater source, the soul, that is invoking, seeking to evoke the personality, and sometimes it is the personality with increasing measure of soul infusion, invoking, reaching upward, hoping to evoke the response from the higher source. The greater light is that of the soul, who is light itself. And this light, of course, is operating throughout the cosmos. Soul is a cosmic principle, really. From the very beginning of each cosmos, there is light. The universe itself is light, and all of the variety of it is a differently condensed light, or precipitated light, we might say. So there is cosmic soul, and there's soul for every one of the great macrocosmic beings, and on down as emanation becomes more and more restricted and constricted, but every emanation is the container for soul, or at least has resident within it soul. The greater light is that of the soul, who is light itself. And there is that, you know, question Is light visible? Well, in a way it must be because everything we see is light, mostly on the dense physical plane, condensed light, precipitated, concretized light. But there are great sources of light as well. Oftentimes, when we see a beam of light, it's rather what's found in the air or in the medium, which is illuminated. But I'm coming to the conclusion that light, although it brings into visibility that which was hidden, that it is also visible. So, the greater light is that of the soul who is light itself, illuminating the manifestation of the threefold personality. The light content, the energy of higher vibration, that which discloses to the personality consciousness its own nature, enters the personality, and the consciousness begins to see and understand what the mechanism really is. And herein lies the correspondence to the macrocosm, as it is symbolized for us in God, and in this case, God is the solar logos, the manifesting light of the solar system, slowly and in good order, bringing to light all of the hidden interplay, which is always present, but is unrevealed until light shines upon it and upon the perceiving mind, which finally registers what has always been there. The solar system is three in one and one in three, and the light of the logos illuminates the whole. When the term logos is used, it usually means solar logos, and when planetary logos is used, the word planetary is usually there. Not always necessarily, but usually. If you see that the three in one are really the one in three, and that the self-becomingness of the one has emerged as three, and that always the three are really and essentially the one, then you are in a way a Trinitarian. This is different perhaps from one of the religious groups that calls themselves Unitarians, and there was a big fight over this kind of thing, back 400 or 500 years ago. The Trinitarians and the Unitarians were busy killing each other one way or another. Some of this focused in Geneva with John Calvin. It's amazing to think that people could get so worked up about these differences in philosophy, but then it was the age of Pisces Virgo. You never have an age with only one sign prominent because the opposite sign will be prominent. You don't have a stick with only one end. Every stick has two ends. So the Virgo was associated with a concrete mind and was important in the formulation of theology, and people took these matters very seriously, life or death matters, based upon your Piscean belief. And even today, there are people, willing to kill you if your belief is other than theirs. And theirs, of course, has been sanctioned by the deity, whatever name one wants to give to that deity. So the greater light is that of the soul, and macrocosmically, the greater light is that of the solar logos, manifesting as three cosmic logoi, who are essentially the solar logos, but who have different functions, just as the spiritual triad comes forth from the monad and is essentially the spiritual triad, but subdivided into different functions and then is reabsorbed at a certain point. The lower light is that which is hidden within the human being on the physical plane. There is a kind of a dark light of matter, which is not dependent upon the light of the soul, since all matter is essentially light. Every unit of matter would have to have its light content, and the Einsteinian formula has shown practically that it is so, that matter is energy. It is light, it is heat, which can be released so far with rather destructive, well, very destructive results, but that's not the way it's going to be forever. As the nuclear fusion becomes a reality and the energy problem of humanity is solved, it'll be pretty hard to corner the market in a scorpionic fashion when such energy is freely available to all. So this light, at a certain stage of man's experience, that inherent light of matter and within matter is awakened throughout the physical body and blends eventually with the greater light. So light is always present in the physical body, but what will awaken it? Well, the soul will do so, and especially the planet Vulcan, which draws forth the light hidden by Mars. Mars is a non-sacred planet. Vulcan overcomes that planet and burnishes the otherwise dark and non-radiant shield of Mars and makes it glow and gleam and radiate. Vulcan burnishes the shield of Mars. And when you think about the shield of Mars, maybe we can think about the atoms found on every level of the personality. Vulcan draws forth their light radiatory content. So the intensification of light is what we're looking for. And this happens as a man progresses and becomes more evolved. The light and life of God himself may emanate from the central spiritual sun, the correspondence of which is the monad, and on the monadic plane of the cosmic planes, here, on this high level, we find the monad of the solar logos. Somewhere in there, in that little green triangle, are quite a few of these higher sources, including the monad of the solar logos. Notice how the causal body has a line connected right into that green triangle, and that shows you that from the monad of the solar logos, a line has descended, just as in an earlier chart we see that from the monad of the human being, a line descends into the central part of the causal body. So there is quite, you know, there is an analogy there. And it's a good one. Okay. You know, I'm thinking about doing this all over again, you know, and these things sometimes happen to me. It's been that kind of day, you know. Don't rush. There is no rush, and yet there is no time to lose. Well, today I've been in a little bit of a rush, and the sign Gemini has not been working for me, or I haven't used it properly. I've scattered the energies. One can't do that when we're talking about recollectedness, can one? Okay, so the light of and life of God, they are the first aspect, let us say, and the third aspect, and when we're talking about life, maybe it's no aspect at all. Maybe it's just the inherent beingness of everything. But anyway, the light and life of God himself may emanate from the central spiritual sun, but it is only as the light within the solar system itself is awakened and aroused that there will come the eventual blazing forth, which will typify the glory of the sun shining in its strength. And I would just like to say that this will be eventually the consummation of our second major and fifth sequential solar system. We are in the second major solar system now, the purpose of which is to develop the soul particularly, so maybe some kind of cosmic fixed cross is involved. But it is also the fifth solar system in a sequence in which the first developed the physical nature, just the way the first root race did, or the third root race, the second, the emotional nature, the third, the mental nature, and maybe the previous one was particularly personal mental. Our third solar system, which was the first major solar system and involved the first of the periodical vehicles, the soul being the second, the monad being the third, or you could count the other way around. So one day there will come the shining forth, the glory of the sun shining in its strength. Now, that would be, I think we could think of as a fifth kind of initiation, and we don't know whether our soul or logos will take the fifth initiation now. It much maybe depends on what goes on Earth, which operates as a base of the spine center needed for the fifth initiation. But at least the fourth will be taken, the crucifixion in a cosmic sense for our solar logos. And we're still a long way from that because we're only halfway through. So there will be a consummation. And similarly, microcosmically, if we are to see light demonstrations in the world of the senses, as we sometimes have seen in the great art and maybe in people as well, sometimes I think I've seen around some Taurus people a peculiar brightness in this area, then we have to awaken the light within the physical atoms and cells. And we do this through refinement and meditation and service, and we awaken through study, meditation, and service. And the refinement comes, and with the refinement, the light demonstration in the lower worlds increases in its intensity. So now he takes the idea and talks about the microcosm. Similarly, the light of the soul may emanate from the monad. And interesting that soul light is really derivative, monadic light. It's not shining with a light of its own, And in the same way, the moon is not shining with its own light, at least in the analogy. The material element is still there, and I suppose some light demonstration is still there, but it would be dark light. It would be darkened unless the sun shone upon it. But essentially, here we have the idea that the light of the soul emanates from the monad. Really, the monad is responsible for everything. When I'm looking at my personality, I'm saying that's the monad at a certain stage of expression. If I'm looking at my causal body or egoic lotus, I'm saying, well, that's the monad at a certain phase of expression. But it is only as the light within the little system, directed by the soul, and through soul infusion becoming more refined and more radiatory, it's only as the light within the little system, directed by the soul, is awakened and aroused that there will come the eventual shining forth of a Son of God. Now, this is the glorification, the kind of glorification that the disciples taken into the desert, probably by Christ working through the body of Jesus, witnessed. He was glorified before them. Of course, what we have there is two beings who had already taken that kind of glorification. They had already taken the third initiation. Jesus, as Joshua the high priest, had already taken that degree, and who knows how long ago it was, maybe Atlantean times in the fourth ray ashram, that the Christ, along with the Buddha, took the third initiation, that kind of and the glorification that goes with it. Though always, there's going to be a rising of potency in the initiations and a rising in the difficulty of taking them, because that was millions of years ago, I suppose, in Middle Atlantean times. So anyway, it's only as the light within the little system directed by the soul is awakened and aroused that there will come the eventual shining forth of a Son of God. Well, maybe not so many of us are shining in the literal sense, and if we go through a lot of concentrated study and occult meditation and really apply what we have, then we will indeed shine forth. Shine forth, it reminds one of the mantram connected with the third initiation. Shine forth is included. And here I wanted to fetch the mantram. May the holy ones whose pupils we aspire to become show us the light we seek. Give us the strong aid of their compassion and their wisdom. There is a peace that passeth understanding. It abides in the hearts of those who live in the eternal. There is a power that maketh all things new. It lives and moves in those who know the self as one. May that peace brood over us, that power uplift us, till we stand where the one initiator is invoked, till we see his star shine forth. May the peace and blessing of the holy ones pour forth over all the worlds. It's mentioned several times. Right, the end of tribulation. Okay. Well, anyway, there it is, and all of us must learn to shine forth. Right. Now, where are we? I did question this, whether light can be seen per se. You know, light brings that which is always present, but undetected, into recognition. Revelation occurs when a light shines. In the light, with which we are accustomed, a greater light shines, and there is disclosed to us that which was always present but is now revealed. So is light seen? Well, sometimes it is, and sometimes it simply reveals that which is hidden. Light is an energy, and matter is now proven to be energy. Light and matter, according to the Einsteinian formula, equals MC squared. Okay, it is proven that matter is light, is energy, is heat, and really everything that we're accustomed to in these lower worlds is a condensation of light and can be liberated into its original form. The question is, how destructively will this occur? And we've already witnessed through the atomic bomb and the hydrogen bomb the destruction that is possible with an engineered release of the light of light and heat of matter intended for destructive purposes. There are, you know, with nuclear fusion coming, it's a different dynamic, and we will have a liberated form of energy which will make available to us much that we have not been able to accomplish. So in these instructions, however, he tells us we are dealing primarily with the microcosm and the light within it. So we're not going to enlarge here on the macrocosmic analogies, but that has been done in A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, and here and there in the teaching it has appeared. But you know, we need both, and I suppose the story of ourselves as the microcosm and our possible advancement, so that we may be of more use, is the greater issue. It's nice to know these very large things, and sometimes we can catch an analogy from the large to the small and fill in what has been missing. In considering the second rule, he goes on, we must note that a conscious relation has been established between the soul and its shadow, the man on the physical plane. The shadow is the man on the physical plane, and when considering the cosmic physical plane, the shadow is the entire man with all of his vehicles found on the lower 18 subplanes. That also is a shadow. So there's the original, which is the monad. There's the reflection, which is the soul, in a way, and there is the shadow, which is the shadow man, the personality man. Now, sometimes that personality is called the reflection of the soul, but the soul is the reflection of the monad. And when we use the, or we designate the soul as the reflection of the monad, we talk about the personality as the shadow, and especially the dense physical demonstration of that personality as the shadow. Now, both have been meditating. The higher is aware of the lower and its progress to a certain degree, and it has been meditating, sending forth its streams of higher energy, invoking the personality and hoping that it will respond, or maybe, what can we say, invoking the soul and incarnation within the personality and trusting that that soul and incarnation will respond, that is the disciple or the aspirant. And the lower man, who is the aspirant or the disciple, has been intensifying his point of tension and seeking to, through invocation, to evoke the response from the higher spiritual source. Both have been meditating, and that seems to be an important statement. It's a question of synchronizing those meditations sometimes, isn't it? If we synchronize the meditations, then we're going to have better results. Students would do well to note this and to remember that one of the objectives of daily meditation is to enable the brain and mind to vibrate in unison with the soul. The alignment, you know, we're usually talking about is the soul-mind-brain alignment. The astral body is usually considered left out of that alignment, and it is the vehicle, we are told, which is most often out of alignment. We have a situation on our planet where the emotional body of the planetary logos is not yet regulated, as it will be when he takes the second cosmic initiation. And similarly, we who are but cells in this greater logos have an astral body which is difficult to tame. So the objective here, to enable the brain and mind to vibrate in unison with the soul. And every day, in a way, we should make sure that this can happen. As it, the soul, seeks in meditation deep to communicate with its reflection. Okay, so for the soul, the personality is a reflection, but when the monad is considered in the process and the soul is the reflection, then the personality is the shadow. The correspondence of this relation or synchronizing vibration is interesting. The soul is distinct from the man on the physical plane and separated by our dotted line, as we have often seen. Here is the residence of what in relation to man is usually called that type of consciousness we call the soul. And the mind and brain are similarly distinct, with the mind seeking to impress the brain with its content and the brain really unable to hold all that the mind holds, just as the mind is unable to hold all that the soul holds. And I suppose we could continue the analogy and say that the soul is not capable of holding all that the monad holds. Interestingly, the monad has a great history. DK hints at it. Sometimes we think of it as a tabula rasa, you know, it's just a blank and it's just pure spirit. And I think, unless I'm mistaken, Blavatsky has advanced that point of view, but it's also suggested by the Tibetan that there's an ancient history to the monad and a huge content. And when it comes to what's going on within our physical brain, the pineal gland corresponding to the soul, and in this case probably to the mind, is the controlling agent of the pituitary body, which is concretized or is more concerned with that concretization we call the personality. So on the left we have the sources, and on the right we have those areas that are impressed by the sources and are more concrete. The relation also between the centers and their synchronization is interesting, and it is epitomized in the evolution of the race as well as the racial unit man. So So here we have, starting from the third initiation, the head, center, and base of the spine are coming into relation. That is a Uranian, a Plutonian connection. And it's also a connection between purpose and will. Will being at the base of the spine and ruled by Pluto, interestingly. Aries, Pluto, Shambhala, the will. Okay. The heart center and the solar plexus at the second initiation, with the sufficient solar plexus energy raised to the heart center at that initiation, and the sufficient sacral energy raised at the first initiation to the throat center. There's a long time, usually, but not always, between the first initiation and the second, and yet only one many years, but only one initiation. So there are no intervening initiations over those many, many years, but when we move from the second initiation and the heart and solar plexus center interaction to the higher interaction, two initiations intervene, the third and the fourth, before we reach the fifth, where there's a complete, well, a completed relationship. Maybe it goes on and becomes even more complete. I don't know if the sixth or seventh degree involving a Maya Varupa, but we call it pretty well complete by the time we reach the fifth initiation. The base of the spine has risen to the head center. Kundalini and the head center are joined, and the serpent comes down to the controlling area at the Ajna center. And yet two initiations intervene, even though a lesser number of years takes place. From the time Jesus was 30 until he was 33, the initiations number 2, 3, and 4 all occurred. But from the time he was born to the 30th year, only one initiation occurred, and that is the second initiation, at least as we have it, usually understand it, at the 30th year. So that gives us kind of an analogy that DK expands upon on page 84 and 85 of Initiation, Human and Solar. I would say that the majority of students of occultism right now that Master DK is teaching have not yet taken the second initiation, but are closing in on it, and the interaction between heart and solar plexus is the one that commands their attention, though it doesn't necessarily mean that the throat and sacral center are completely resolved. That not all sacral energy by any means has risen to the throat center, and it's still out of control for some disciples who are otherwise heading for the next initiation. So the Uranian and Plutonian climax of all of this occurs at the fifth degree, and then perhaps we can say that as we advance into the still higher initiation than the third, whatever's left over of the relationship between the sacral and throat and solar plexus and heart, in other words, whatever of the lower center must, ever energy of the lower center must still rise into the next higher, sacral to throat, solar plexus to heart, will be accomplished and taken care of. It's a bit like if we look at the egoic lotus, where will we find it? Maybe here, there. When we're looking at the sacrifice petals, although there's a lot of activity of the sacrifice petal in the first initiation and a lot of activity of the second sacrifice petal at the second initiation, it's not until all three of them are unfolded at the third initiation that whatever unfoldment remains for the seventh and eighth petal is finally completed. I think you can see the analogy there. Okay. In the above lies a hint for the more advanced student, and he is the one who hesitates so to regard himself. DK, you know, he's always trying to convey to us the desirability of cultivating, quote, an adjusted sense of right proportion. He calls this humility. You know, it's a pride, spiritual pride, mental pride, great dangers for students of occultism. And maybe it is that many students of DK, who is in some ways a very mentally accomplished master, a true expert, you know, maybe the foremost expert on the rays and the astrological factors and the creative hierarchies. Maybe his students fall somewhat into this trap of mental pride. I've seen it a lot. I've experienced it myself. So he's saying, you know, those who have a better sense of proportion and a sense of what's large and small don't regard themselves as especially advanced. It is also symbolized for us in the relation between the Eastern and Western hemispheres and between those great bodies of truth we call religion and science. I mean, we find both in both places, but maybe the spiritual religious approach is more akin to the Eastern hemisphere and science to the West. Of course, in the East, there is the science of occultism, and it's closely guarded, and it's not spread so generally, widely. But in the West, science is popularized and more visible, and it seems that the man in the street and most fairly educated Western people know about it. So science seems to flourish in the West at this time. And the spiritual approach in the East, but that's changing. You know, there's been a huge industrialization in the East and a lot of disturbance, I suppose, of the settled occult atmosphere that DK says is necessary in order to really successfully follow out occult development. So, you know, we have just terrible pollution in India and China and places which have undergone rapid industrialization, and perhaps there's a disturbance then of that necessary settled occult atmosphere, condition of the ethers, which promotes occultism. And more into the second ray soul and fourth ray personality of the West, there is the moving of the spiritual approach, occultism, religion, and so forth. And the New World religion, which will be a universal religion, universal as far as our planet is concerned, and involving the invocation and evocation of energy, will arise, we're told, in the West, and particularly in Russia with its seventh-ray soul and sixth-ray personality, and its Aquarius soul and Leo personality. The Aquarius soul and the seventh-ray, very powerful for the future. Whatever, you know, insufficiencies the present leaders of Russia or of the United States or any other country have, there will be a destiny that goes beyond those insufficiencies, and great gifts will emerge from both Russia and the United States and from the United Kingdom, the three countries which particularly, according to DK, hold the fate of humanity in their hands. Have I finally reached the point when I realized before there was no image? Oh my, you know, that's a little disheartening when it happens. And you say, oh, because it's not easy to find the time, you know, always to do these sort of commentaries. And when you've cleared the time and, oh, you know, now you can get to it, and to realize you've undone yourself through negligence. It's not a good feeling when it happens, and then you have to decide, oh, do I just release the audio? But then if we don't see the words, you know, it takes something away, so then we have to do it all over again. And can I possibly mention what I mentioned before, and what good things are going to escape, and will I overcrowd the second presentation, which of course I did. All right, well, you know, such is the fate of the negligent video commentator. Anyway, the life of meditation proceeds, and the rapport between soul and its triple instrument becomes steadily closer, and the resulting vibration is more powerful. So, you know, we will want to read about the technique of integration in esoteric psychology, too. Oh, well, I'll spell it out. Esoteric psychology, too. How many lives this will take depends upon various factors which are too numerous to be mentioned but which the student will find it useful to consider. Well, you know, our own will, purpose, and sincerity. Will, purpose, sincerity count, but also karma, which may not yet be expiated. Expiated. Okay. Now, how does that spell? There it is. Expiated. Let him list the factors which he feels he needs to take into account as he seeks to decide his evolutionary standpoint. Well, I think we all, you know, begin to see our liabilities. There are many we don't, and that's where Master DK's letters to his disciples were so useful, because they're, you know, just the way they didn't really know their rays, or reversed oftentimes this soul and personality rays, so don't really know all the factors which may be inhibitory. We know some, and we've got to get to work on them, and then through the assistance of a higher teacher, especially a master, certain things are pointed out which will expedite our progress and bring a general and safe type of rapidity into our process. So we have to list the factors, and we could do that, couldn't we? You know, every one of those heads of the Hydra give us an example of what such a factor might be. You know, what is it? I mean, to what are we attached? By what vice are we caught? It's interesting about the word vice, meaning the tool, but also that which traps the consciousness of an aspirant or disciple. By what vice are we trapped? And have we overcome the world, the flesh, and the devil, as we must to a sufficient degree in the desert process following the second initiation? The Christ was there and he overcame great things. Now, it's not for us to overcome at the same level that he overcame, but we all have our own world, flesh, and devil. Well, it's interesting, the world correlating with the etheric physical, the flesh with the astral, and the devil with the mind, the prideful mind. We all have those obstacles to overcome before we can be really clean and clear enough to go forward on the Syrian path of initiation. Doesn't mean we're going to necessarily take the path to Sirius, but the whole process is Syrian in that respect. The whole initiatory process and the stimulation of the Great White Lodge so that it can offer on our planet the initiatory process. The result of this response is a reorientation of the lower man in order to produce a synthesis of the three and the one so that the work of the four may proceed all together. So, you know, in this case, the soul and its personality, but we will also be speaking of the thought form to be created in the white magical process. MGL, white magical. Oh, I had that one somewhere. There it is. WML. Okay. Whew. I knew I had it somewhere. The white magical process. When I see the word magic, I want a G. Okay. Here you have the reflection consummated in the microcosm of that with that which the solar logos started. The sacred four of the cosmos. Man, in his turn, becomes the sacred four. Well, you know, maybe the three cosmic logoi plus the solar logos make the truly sacred four. But, you know, actually what we're talking about here, we're talking about the personality of the solar logos plus his own nature, make the solar systemic sacred for. So, yeah. And you know, on we can go with Cosmic Logoi, and we can deal also beyond, because there's more than one about whom not may be said, more than one of them, and on it goes, and galaxies will get together on this basis as well, and who knows what stupendous beings we're talking about when we get to those high levels. Four words should be commented or pondered upon here: communication, response, reorientation, union. I think you can see how they develop. The soul and personality begin to both meditate together and communicate. There will be a response from the personality or the soul in incarnation, and also an evocation of further attention by the soul. There will be a reversal of the wheel, and the personality will really turn around and really orient itself towards the east, which is orientation towards the soul. And finally, there will be the necessary union that we call integration, and finally fusion. The old commentary expresses it in the following terms. I always love to see the old commentary coming, and then I wonder, can I understand it, you know, because a very symbolic language is used. When communion is established, words are forthwith used, and mantric law assumes its rightful place, provided that the one communicates the words and the three remain in silence. Okay, this is amazing. We know what we have to do here. We have to listen. And the words originating in the personality are of no real value in this process unless they have been inspired by the soul. When response is recognized as emanating from the three, the one in silence listens. So this is really communication, isn't it? Communication and interplay headed for communion. That comes later, that's the union. The roles are changed. So first we are invoked, and evocation comes forth, and an evocation arises from us. And we know we use mantras which are given or suggested or arise under the influence of the one. And then that one listens when we use these. The roles are changed. A threefold word issues from out the triple form. A turning round is caused. This is the reorientation and repentance. Repentance. Okay. Yeah, and also called true reversal of the wheel. Okay. Well, that looks like something I should have. All right. It will go up there, and we'll see. Yeah, this is the reversal of the wheel. This is what happens. A true reversal of the wheel. Now, you know, there have been tendencies to orient towards the higher self all along, but before there's sufficient momentum to really get that wheel turning in the opposite direction and get the energies rising into the upper part of the body rather than sort of trapped in the lower part, even though they had to pass through the higher part, it takes a while. The eyes no longer look upon the world of form. They turn within. This is a true subjective introspection, not just looking at the subtle bodies. Truly subjective introspection. They focus the light and see revealed an inner world of being. With this, the manna stills itself, for eyes and mind are one. Big hint here, for eyes and mind are one. We see through the mind. That's one of the ways of seeing. We can also see through the heart. The Yoga Sutras are here suggested. And the cessation of the modifications of the versatile psychic nature, mind, which is both mind and the emotional nature. Okay, so a stilling occurs, a reorientation, a looking inward towards the subjective aspect of our nature, which is not just the subtle aspect of our nature, because the subtle aspect, you know, has to do with ether, astral, and mind, and especially astral and mind. But we have to look beyond that, because the astral and mind are still objective, in a way. Okay, what's happening? The heart no longer beats in tune with low desire, nor wastes its love upon the things that group and hide the real. It beats with rhythm new. And this is the law of rhythm, right? We were talking about that earlier and related to the law of vibration, law of rhythm, related to the law of vibration, L-O-V-B, law of vibration. Okay, let's get that one. Let's get that one. L-O-V-B. Okay, this will be the law of vibration, the very first law of the system. Okay, L-O-V-B. L-O-V-B. Oh, no. Sorry for the delay. This is the way it's been today. V-B and law of V-I-B-R-A-T-I-O-N. Right. Yes, and yes, law of vibration. It pours its love upon the real, and Maya fades away, Maya in the large sense. Maya not just as that which relates only to ether, but the great Maya which includes glamour and includes illusion as well. Kama and heart are close allied, and not just the desire body seeking its own elemental satisfaction. Love and desire form one whole, because one desires what love indicates as lovable. One sees at night. That's the desire. And the other in the light of day. Beautiful, beautiful language here. I think we understand it, can understand it. When fire and love and mind submit themselves, sounding the threefold word, there comes a response. Well, fire, what can we call it? Let's call it, what should we call it? Etheric fire, love as desire, and mind. So desire transmuted into love, which is the goal for the astral plane. Desire transmuted into love and mind. There comes a response, I suppose, from the higher being. The one enunciates a word and drowns the triple sound. God speaks, and we might say, you know, what is God? It depends. God as soul speaks. A quivering and a shaking in the form responds. The new stands forth, the man remade. The form rebuilt, the house prepared, the fires unite, all the fires of the three. Well, let's just say soul of fire and fire by friction. That's another way of looking at it. Soul of fire and fire by friction. And great the light that shines. The three merge with the one, and through the blaze, a fourfold fire is seen. Oh, this is wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful. And, to me, you know, of course, we're dealing also with the thought form. the creator of the thought form, the magician and his thought form, and that's a lower correspondence to this marvelous discussion of what happens to the threefold man in relation to the soul. Okay. Well, I love that. And I just sent it to my wife upstairs. Oh, it's the Tibetan. It's so inspiring. And I'll tell you what I'm going to do. And I'm going to overlook my own remarks in this. I'm just going to read it. So forget what I've said. And we'll just deal with the old commentary to get the idea. When communion is established, words are forthwith used, and mantric law assumes its rightful place, provided that the one communicates the words and the three remain in silence. When response is recognized as emanating from the three, the one in silence listens. The roles are changed. A threefold word issues from out the triple form. A turning round is caused. The eyes no longer look upon the world of form. They turn within. Focus the light and see revealed an inner world of being. With this, the manas stills itself, for eyes and mind are one. The heart no longer beats in tune with low desire, nor wastes its love upon the things that group and hide the real. It beats with rhythm new. It pours its love upon the real, and Maya fades away. Kama and heart are close allied. Love and desire form one whole, one seen at night, the other in the light of day. When the fire and love and mind submit themselves, sounding the threefold word, there comes response. The one enunciates a word which drowns the triple sound. God speaks. A quivering and a shaking in the form responds. The new stands forth, a man remade, the form rebuilt, the house prepared. The fires unite, and great the light that shines. The three merge with the one, and through the blaze a fourfold fire is seen. Well, may we all blaze forth in this manner. How powerful is the old commentary to evoke our participation in the process. He says, in this pictorial writing, which I have sought to convey in modern English, the sages of old embodied an idea. The old commentary from which these words are taken has no assignable date. Should I endeavor to tell you its age, I have no means of proving the truth of my words, and hence would be faced with credulity, a thing aspirants must avoid in their search for the essential and the real. Well, you know, I'm going to begin here, really, when I come to number 18. So this is going to be the end of a treatise on white magic video commentary, this time with video, okay? And it's number 17, and it's rule 2.1, and page something to page something. I guess it's page 71 to page 76, all right. And we'll have next the beginning, beginning of a treatise on white magic video commentary number 18, rule 2.2, start at page 76, and going back here to, you know, the 71 that we had, I guess it's right here, 276. I'm getting rather excited by this book, you know. It's been a long time since I have really read it, and never more closely than when having to make commentary on these things and try to, you know, stimulate our sense of connection. Maybe that's the one thing I can do here, is to stimulate connections via Mercury so that light can flash forth and an articulated wholeness can emerge. Hopefully, this can be studied by the individual, and if not, then studied by the group, with the individual paying close attention to the group process. We in the University of Seven Rays, for many, many years, have studied these things in group form, and it's always always spiritually profitable, I think. All right, that's it. And we'll see you for number 18 as soon as maybe practicable. See you soon.